MDN-TV, the podcast. Be abreast with now. Never miss a thing with MDN-TV, the podcast. We love to keep you in the present with diverse goodies from secular and non-secular subjects of global interest. Join us. Grab more from these series. Listen to our podcast. The undeniable choice.
It's sundown. The day has just begun. Good morning, good morning, good morning, everybody. Yes, this is MDN Shows Running with the Times. MDN Shows has pitched his tent away from traditional grounds just to reach you only on MDN TV, the podcast. And I am Major Daughter. Welcome to all our listeners and viewers around the world. Meet us in the comments. We are live there. Engage, share this podcast, share this broadcast. Tell everybody it's happening. Now ask them to jump in. I'll tell you why. We live in a knowledge economy. It is what you know. It matters what you know. It matters what you hear. So you want to keep yourself updated. Someone who doesn't know that the economy is knowledge economy will just ignore this conversation. Well, I dare you not to ignore this one, especially today, because we are talking how B Corp certification makes us better. Have you ever heard of it? Do you know what B Corp? Everyone go for B Corp certification? Well, you're about to find out right after this.
MDN-TV, the podcast. Be abreast with now. Never miss a thing with MDN-TV, the podcast. We love to keep you in the present with diverse goodies from secular and non-secular subjects of global interest. Join us. Grab more from these series. Listen to our podcast. The undeniable choice.
Well, the undeniable choice indeed for today is Nathan Duck. He's my guest and he joins me momentarily. Thanks a gazillion times, Nathan, for availing yourself and for your contribution to humankind. Look, Nathan brings a unique perspective to speaking engagements with a decade of professional experience. Well, I'll leave all that to him. Nathan, welcome. The mic sings to you now. Please tell everyone, who are you and what do you do? Nathan?
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here. I'm Nathan Stuck. I'm the founder and CEO of Profitable Purpose Consulting. And I also am the founder and board chair for B Local Georgia, which is a nonprofit for all the B Corps in the state of Georgia in the United States. And then I'm on the board of B Academics. I'm on a bunch of nonprofit boards. And before I started my own company, I was working at the largest B Corp in the state of Georgia that I met while I was doing university studies, doing my master's degree in business. I worked on a B Corp project, and that's what started me down this journey. So, I was excited to be here. I was excited to talk B Corps.
Wow, you are welcome. You must be loaded, I tell you. Tell us what B Corp, what's a B Corp, and why should businesses certify to have one or be certified as a B Corp?
So B Corp, B Corps are to a for-profit business what LEED is to a building, what certified organic is to milk. It's B Corps are the gold standard of corporate social responsibility. So there's a lot of things out there. There's a lot of good marketing teams out there that can make things sound good. The tough part now is with everybody kind of having a commitment to everything. They know they need to do it. But it doesn't always mean that they're doing it. I don't want to say well, but that they're doing it with actual results. You know, I mean, you see a lot of these commitments to net zero and it's like, what's the plan? We don't have a plan. We just put out a press release. So B Corp, you actually have to, everything that you go through, you fill out an assessment, you have to document everything, verify everything. You go through an audit, essentially of the good you're doing, where they're like, prove it, prove it, prove it. And once you get through that, you're actually certified. So it's the only third party verified, like you're actually doing good in the world as a business and using your business as a force for good.
And where does a business get this B Corp certification?
So there's a nonprofit called B-Lab. B-Lab Global oversees it. And that there's now 6,000 B Corps in around 80 countries, in like 155 industries. So it's everything. You don't have to be a social enterprise. You don't have to be any, as long as you're a for-profit business, you can certify with B-Lab that you're, you know, actually doing good in the world.
Wow, wow, wow. And you say certifying as a B Corp makes us better. How?
Yeah. So, you know, I think a lot of companies, you know, when I had that opening statement, it's like, you know, I don't think the majority of companies have bad intentions. I think the majority of companies have good intentions. They're just not really, you know, I think going through this assessment helps you. You have to quantify a lot of things, you know, and I've been there. I've been working at a company where you think, okay, yeah, we care about gender equality. We care about this. And then you look at your actual numbers and you're like, maybe we don't care as much as we thought we did.
Yeah.
Because our numbers aren't adding up. So I think that process of going through the assessment and having to answer questions about your business, about your community impact, about your commitment to, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion, your commitment to, you know, doing no harm to the environment. And when you start to quantify things, I think it's rather eye-opening, but I think that that's step one of the journey is once you know where you're at and you know where you want to be, you can start now, you can kind of reverse engineer those strategies of like, how do we, you know, if we want to be more, you know, gender diverse, where are we recruiting? What does our job application look like? What does the job description say? Or if our community impact, if we want to do 1% of revenue to the, you know, giving back to the community and we're doing 0.2%, okay, well, what does that look like? What's the number we need to hit? And what's the strategy we need to do to get there? So that to me is the beauty of the process. I always tell companies, even if you don't certify, if you don't go all the way through with it, the assessment tool is free. Like, use it to start figuring out what your current state is, and then decide where you want to go and what's manageable. And, you know, because we do have to run businesses, we do have to make money, we do have to hit payroll. So what's manageable right now to work on? What's a 2023 goal for us as you go through this assessment and start kind of chunking it out and planning your sprints and improving your business?
Talking about gender, we have so many companies and big corporates who talk about women empowerment and social responsibility, which is only on paper, really. When you look at their staff and their management, it's not there. Very far from empowering women. You have companies who set out policies and say, this is our policy, but it just ends there as a policy in black and white, not in reality. How does B Corp certification help in this regard?
You know, I think it's the big thing. Yeah. The big thing for me is, I think it's that tracking and that measurement. And I mean, even looking at like pay multipliers and and doing a pay equity analysis of going through and realizing, do I have women that are making less than men that are in the same job or that have the same level of education? It'll help uncover some of those hidden biases. But, you know, as you start to look at board diversity and management diversity and, you know, and also starting to look at like, okay, you look at your retention numbers when you go through this process, how many people have left in the last 12 months? How many of them were women? How many of them were people of color? Like what, you know, like, are we, you know, even if we're getting diversity in the door, are we making them feel included? Are we providing an equitable opportunity for them? Are they sticking around? Will tell us whether we are. So yeah. I think that's the beauty of the process is, you know, if you're coming into this and you really want to do well, I think coming into it with a little humility, knowing that like, hey, this might not be where we want to be, but I want to get there. I think it's a great tool to help you get there.
Well, I think some governments are getting it right, like UK. They've just brought in for the first time an Asian descent prime minister. We'll leave that for another day, though. We are not there. Let's talk about a movement. Does B Corp have a movement? And why does a B Corp movement matter?
That's a great question. Yeah, it's a great question. I would say at this point, yes, it's a movement. You know, we were a little worried in 2020 that maybe this thing, you know, fizzles is, you know, people dealt with, you know, global pandemic and, you know, everything that was going on in the United States with, I think, for the first time, people really seeing the lived experience of our Black community and seeing what happened and George Floyd being murdered on TV. There was so much going on in 2020 that I think we worried that maybe small businesses would struggle and maybe companies wouldn't be focused on certifying as B Corps and demand would go down. And in reality, what happened was at the time, at the beginning of 2020, there were like 4,000 B Corps and there were 4,000 companies that applied that you went through the assessment and submitted in 2020 alone, where you saw this doubling down of values and this commitment to like, wow, you know, like this, we do need to stand for more than just like one, you know, like we really need to put our effort behind being a good business that wants to drive societal change. So I think that's where the movement's coming from. I also think it's here to stay because you're seeing kind of the, I don't want to say the death of shareholder capitalism, but I think you're seeing the birth of stakeholder capitalism. Yeah. We'll go optimistic. We'll call it the birth of stakeholder capitalism. But I, you know, you see Gen Z and millennials, and you know, millennials are getting, we're middle aged now, and then Gen Z is, you know, they're out there in the workforce, and they don't care that your first job was miserable. They don't care that, you know, that you had to pay your dues and do like they don't care that your, you know, your job was your job. And then you went and you, you know, like they want to be themselves at work. They want to be open and out, and they want to dress how they want to dress. Like they want purpose at work, and they don't want to have to hide anything. They just want to be able to be and create value in the world, create value for the business. And you know, we always say that the next generation behind us is lazy or entitled. And I don't think that's it at all. I think this generation is just kind of like, wait, why has everybody been putting up with this for so long? So, you know, I think now the movement is not only needed by society, but I think it's something that businesses are going to have to adjust and adapt and become.
Yes.
This version of business and care, because you're not going to recruit top talent. You're just, they don't want to work for you. They don't want a mindless job. They don't want any of that. They want purpose and meaning and drive and all those things at work. So I think that's where the movement is going to take off. And you're seeing bigger and bigger companies, you know, multinationals like Danone, you know, I mean, you've already got the Patagonias of the world, but now that you're seeing some of these really big, you know, Bailey's, the liqueur company just certified, like you're starting to see bigger and bigger companies, you know, it takes them a lot longer because it, you know, they're turning an ocean liner, not a speedboat, but they're doing it because they see it. And I think that's okay to say that they see the ROI. They see that this is good for their business and for their bottom line. It's the right thing to do, but it can also be good for business.
Look, talking about millennials, because you bring that up. Look, I tell people that every business needs a millennial, you know, if that business want to thrive. But how does a business attract and retain millennials and the Gen Z?
You know, it's funny. I always make the joke that millennials, like we weren't happy when we came in, because I call myself an upper cusp millennial, which is, that's just code for I'm old. But I'm an upper cusp millennial. And I think, you know, we didn't really love our first job. We didn't really love what we walked into. And, you know, I went through, you know, I was already out in the working world and, you know, the 2004 recession, and then, you know, 2007 happened, and, you know, and that didn't, you know, really recover till, you know, the mid 2013, 2014. And so, you know, I think millennials, we weren't happy, but when Gen Z showed up behind us and kind of just was like, burn it all down.
Yeah.
They were almost like anarchists when they got into the workforce of like, we're not doing this. We're not putting up with it. And I think it helped millennials find their voice. And at that point now, millennials were. Yeah. And millennials, I think we at that point now, we were like directors and vice presidents and founders. And so I think we had a little more power. So when Gen Z showed up, we went like, if this is what you want, we'll champion it. So I think that empowered millennials have really driven this because Gen Z showed up and kind of said, hey, like, this is what we want. And I think we were kind of close enough to translate that maybe to the generation that's older, that, you know, the Gen X. I think we were able to kind of translate that to Gen X, who maybe was the CEO of the company, of like, hey, here's what's changing. Here's why it matters. And here's what you need to do to recruit and retain this next generation of employees. So I think we worked in tandem, but I give Gen Z most of the credit because I think they really, really, really pushed the envelope.
Look, what do you think are some of the mistakes that corporates are making and businesses are making when it comes to recruiting and retaining the millennials and the Gen Z? Nathan?
You know, I think there's two things. I think one is I don't think a lot of them know what the lived experience of their employees really is. I think they tell a story that is drastically different than what their employees experience. And I think that will reflect in the hiring process because, you know, these young people are savvy now. They have tools like LinkedIn. They'll reach out to people that work at these companies. They'll ask them raw questions and get their perspective. And I think that's number one, is that gap between, like, you know, you're painting this picture of working here that is something that isn't realistic. Instead of being truthful about, you know, hey, maybe the hours are still long, but hey, we do a lot of volunteer stuff. We're charitable. We do all these things, but the nature of our business means long hours. So just say that. The other thing that I think they missed the boat on is, you know, when I talked to my students, I moderated a panel on Saturday, and I heard this, and we were talking about, like, how to tell. We were talking more around the realms of, like, sustainability in the textile industry, but I think it goes for everything. If you're interested in working for a company and you check out their About Us page or their sustainability page, if you just take your marketing team and you put a spin on things and you don't have raw data, you don't have any statistics, you don't have any sort of certification, you're just like, fun place to work, challenging work environment that rewards hard work. Like, when Gen Z sees that, they just roll their eyes, and they know that it was, like, the marketing team and the recruiting team working together. Yeah. But like, there's no substance to it. It's just a bunch of kind of recruiting fluff. And Gen Z, more than any generation, I think, sees right through it. So I think that's the tough part, is getting that right.
If you had to start again tomorrow, would you do the same things? Would you follow the same route you have followed to get you where you are? Or would you change your strategy? Nathan?
Oh, that's a great question. I literally just released a book about my about my career.
wow.
And it's funny because it's like, my career is nothing special. I even write that in the prologue. No. I said something like, who am I and should you continue reading this book? And I put short story, nobody. Wow. And probably not. But, you know, I think my story, I love it because it was intentional, but I didn't realize it was intentional. So I don't think I would change anything. And everything led me to where I am. And I think, you know, you put yourself in the, you know, what do they say? Luck is when hard work meets opportunity. So, you know, I think the way I got here, and if I don't stumble into an MBA program and kind of, like, on fumes and burned out on capitalism and, you know, all these things, I think, you know, going through the bad jobs and some of the really good jobs and the bad jobs and the good bosses and the bad bosses, I think when I got to the MBA program, and then I all of a sudden, here's this project, this company wants to certify as a B Corp, and I think everything that I had gone through up to that point prepared me to care as much as I did and want to work on that project for no class credit, no pay, nothing, just pure interest. And I ended up working on it for that semester and then another semester. And the next thing you know, before I even graduated, I was working for that company, and I spent 5.5 years there, and they empowered me to start Be Local Georgia and really become, like, the B Corp expert in the United States, in the Southeast at least. And it's opened up doors for me that never would have been open. So I wouldn't change anything because, you know, I'm a believer in kind of fate, destiny, whatever, that, you know, you're put in situations, and God gives you challenges and opportunities that you don't understand at the time, and they become clearer after you come out of them, that like, oh, that's what that was. So yeah, no, I'm grateful for everything that's happened and the way it happened and in the hard times, and now kind of enjoying the good times, but knowing that when it's good, that usually means it's going to go back down at some point. So, but yeah, no, I've enjoyed the ride.
Congratulations on your success. And I believe that book, it must be a very good read. Let's talk about CSR. Do you think corporates are really committed to CSR? And if they are, what are the benefits for the corporate, for the business, not those on the receiving end? And if I could throw in this one on top of these, what are three types of CSR that you could recommend to any corporate right now? Nathan? Ooh. Quite a long question, but...
I'll start with the first part. I'll start with the first part, which is our corporation's really bought in. And I will say, I don't know if they are for the right reasons yet. I will say that I think the demand curve has shifted. I think that corporations have realized they're smart enough to know that they have to do it. They're smart enough to know that to recruit employees, to attract customers, you know, I mean, the oldest Gen Z is 27 years old now. The oldest millennial is 41. I think to get those, you know, that, I mean, that's a lot of purchasing power out in the economy. Yeah. That's a lot of you know, employees out in the economy, that like to get them. They realize the demand curve has moved and they have to do these things. What I think they still struggle with is they don't necessarily know how to do them. I mean, you see it in commercials, you see the greenwashing, you see the woke washing. I mean, you saw that horrible, what was it? The Pepsi commercial in 2020 during the George Floyd protests, where one of the Kardashians or Jenners or whatever, like hands a Pepsi to a police officer during a protest and it just blew up in their face. They don't know how to do it yet. Like to them, that was like them trying to make a statement. And it was like a brutally, just like it had to have been a bunch of like 60-year-old white men in a room making that decision to run that commercial. But so they at least they know they have to do it. And now I think they're trying to get good at it. You're seeing more and more companies hire chief sustainability officers, chief CSR officers, chief culture officers, impact officers. So I think they're trying to surround themselves with experts. I think the three areas that probably I would say to focus on are that, I mean, I'm big in the culture and impact space. So I would say corporate culture. And I think some companies they move so slow that they're still putting like ping pong tables in break rooms. And really it's like, no, you missed the point. We don't even want to come into the office anymore. You know, that somebody that's always has their ear to the ground, that's talking to employees, that's trusted by employees, that, you know, actually acts on feedback and can translate that feedback to the executive team. And I think that culture piece of understanding the gaps between maybe what you as an executive think your company is, what you want it to be, and what it actually is, and trying to narrow that gap and trying to empower your employees to give feedback, to feel like they're heard, to feel like they're a part of the decision-making process. I think that's a big area of opportunity, because again, if you talk about your company and you talk about how great the employee experience is and your employees aren't really living it, you're going to have retention issues. And it's going to, you know, and now there's things like Glassdoor where, you know, they go on and they leave negative reviews. And so, I think that's the first step. I think impact is another one, like having quantifiable impact in the community, feeling like the company exists for more than just making money. I think that is a huge opportunity, and it has to be something that employees feel bought into, that they feel, you know, does it align with what you do? Do you make it easy for them to serve? Do you give them time off to volunteer? Does the company do stuff, you know, even on their own? And are you supporting causes that are important? Like for us, you know, in an industry, my old company, we were in the IT industry and it was a very white male dominated industry. And so we did a lot of work with nonprofits working to bring more people of color into that industry. And so from middle school and, you know, grade school, middle school, high school, to university of like, how can we, who can we empower? And our employees love that. And we'd bring them in to, you know, we'd bring those nonprofit leaders in sometimes for company calls to talk about the impact our, you know, our money and our volunteer time has made on their organization. And so I think that impact is very important, and making your employees feel a part of that process as well. And then the last one, I think, right now is, you know, I mean, for us that had a major DEI component, but I think the other one, I'm torn between DEI and environmentalism, because I mean, in the United States right now, DEI, like if you're not doing it right, if it feels like lip service, if it feels like, you know, you're making, you know, hires just because, I think people smell that out. I think they know it. So I think like really being intentional about, you know, upstream solutions, you know, again, like we were doing, like trying to work with college students, like how do we diversify our industry, not just our company? I think, you know, when you go into it with a real strategy of making a real sizable impact and not necessarily just worried about your own, you know, annual impact report, I think that goes a long way. And same thing with the environment. I think, you know, Gen Z and millennials, like, we'll, like, if you're just like, if it's just a lazy attempt at carbon credits, you know, I think they want to see real action and real progress and real, you know, what are we doing? What can we do more? And I think that even that self-assessment in all these categories of the transparency of admitting that, like, hey, we could do better. Here are the areas of opportunity we think we have to improve. Here's what we're going to work on next year, and we'll hold ourselves accountable to those goals. So I know that was like five, but
That's great. You gave more than what we asked for. Well, look, you mentioned a lot of culture in your responses. It always boils down to culture, it appears. So why does aligning brand and culture matter, Nathan?
Because the first people that know the truth are your employees. You know, I mean, the people that know the truth, if you're putting out commercials about, you know, your commitment to diversity, equity, inclusion, or your commitment to the environment, your employees know whether that's real or not. So, you know, you want to talk about making an unhappy employee, like a disgruntled, resentful employee, like keep talking about your company in a way that doesn't resonate with your employees. Keep talking about commitments that you're making that everybody on the inside knows that you're really not. I think that, you know, when you're just putting like, you know, the American expression, putting lipstick on a pig, it's like, if you're just doing that, I think that's... Your employees know. And so I mean, you talk about building employee loyalty and, you know, all this talk of the great resignation. And I think really what it boils down to is companies living by the values that they espouse. And so I think that's been the biggest thing, is just when employees feel that disconnect, it's like, they're going to go look elsewhere. I mean, it's kind of like seeing a flaw in a partner when you're dating and you kind of see that flaw for the first time. And you're like, I don't think I can live with this, you know? And it's like, all right, well, I'm going to break up with them and try to find somebody else. And you know, I think we've become too accustomed to, well, people are just going to leave. Well, I mean, are they? Do they have to?
And that's problematic.
Yes.
I think that is very... Yes. Please proceed, Nathan. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, no. I mean, I think we've resigned to just being, you know, just that's like some inherent truth, when in reality there's, you know, that we all say that like those jobs died, you know, with our grandparents, where the job where you'd work at the factory for 50 years and you had a pension and you had all these. I don't know that that needs to be dead. I think we became so obsessed with shareholder value and shareholder returns that we stopped really caring about our employees, and we stopped really caring about the culture or the, you know, hey, you don't like it, leave it. You know, you don't want this job, go somewhere else. Like, I think we became so obsessed with that, like squeezing those margins, and it usually resulted in squeezing our employees of, you know, if we lay off Bob, well, you know, Mary can work, you know, an extra 10 hours a week and we don't have to give her any more money because she'll be grateful that she didn't get laid off. And it's what we started thinking like that, of how do we, you know, what squeezing those margins at the expense of our employees. And I think this new generation got here and went like, okay, well, then I'll go somewhere. There's got to be somebody who doesn't operate like this. And those are the companies that are going to win. Those are the companies that are going to win all that talent. And I think that a lot of these dinosaurs who were so concerned with quarterly growth and this and quarterly profitability at the expense of, you know, the environment and their community and their people, yeah. I think they're either going to adapt or die.
I hope they're listening.
Me too.
We want to be better versions of ourselves. How can we become better versions of ourselves? I mean, it sounds more like you hear it all the time, but nobody really gets to break it down. I mean, help even the simplest man to understand what you are saying. Nathan, can you help us do that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, because I think a lot of these principles, you know, you can take them into your personal life and become a better version of yourself. You know, like, take volunteerism as an example of, like, I started tracking my volunteer hours in a spreadsheet. I know what I do, how often I do it, what my community impact is. You know, so I think even in your personal life, starting to quantify, like, what are the things I really care about? What do I want to accomplish this year? What do I, you know, like, and having those goals, but the goals beyond just like, oh, I want to get a promotion and I want this and I want that, like thinking more holistically about your, you know, your annual goals, your monthly goals, your weekly goals of what do I want to accomplish? What societal impact do I want to have? You know, that I'm going to do one trash pickup every month, or that I'm going to volunteer at the food bank once a month, or, you know, and actually holding yourself accountable to those. I think, you know, I'm going to read 2 books on personal development. I'm going to mentor students at the local, you know, elementary school. Like, I think starting to think like that, and it's the same premise as what you're doing, you know, as a company going through the B impact assessment and going through B Corp certification. Like, why can't we take some of those principles to our own day-to-day lives and start to quantify some of the things and, you know, really self-assess and look ourselves in the mirror and say, am I who I want to be as a human being? Am I, you know, and I mean, I hate to get grim, but, you know, in 50 years, like most of us are listening, right, we'll probably be dead. What's our legacy? What is that going to look like when you're laying on your deathbed? Are you going to look back and say, I'm really proud of the work I did and the footprint I've left behind in this world? I did stuff to make this world better while I was here. And I think starting to think about that without getting overly depressed, starting to think about that at a younger age, I think will improve the impact you're going to have. I think it helps you define who you want to be and what you want to accomplish. And really it also helps you figure out what's important to you. You know, I mean, money is great. You can enjoy things and, you know, but like at the end of the day, like, relationships matter, friendships matter, you know, impact matters. So figuring out what, you know, sitting down and having that self-discovery too of what matters to you, I think goes a long way in what you're going to accomplish in life.
So, and after all, you are in competition with you.
MDNTV, the podcast. Be abreast with now. Never miss a thing with MDNTV, the podcast. We love to keep you in the present with diverse goodies from secular and non-secular subjects of global interest. Join us. Grab more from these series. Listen to our podcast, The Undeniable.
Well, the undeniable choice is still Nathan Stark. It's a self-discovery, self-assessment. Track your volunteer hours. Have you ever heard of that? Track your work. Track your contributions. Set have goals for. Have monthly goals, weekly goals, annual goals. If you're contributing anywhere in the society, track it, measure it. You are competing with you. Thank you for staying on. Look, if you have not shared this broadcast, what are you waiting for? Nathan is still with me. We are at the tail end. Nathan, and I'm thinking, tell us about your teachable moment and your aha moment in your journey. You sure do have teachable moment and aha moment. Nathan?
My biggest aha moment. So I'll give the abridged version. So, you know, like my career, yes. I had some decent jobs, some good bosses, whatever. I, you know, 5 years with Enterprise Rent-A-Car, which, you know, is, I think, the biggest rental car company anyway. And I did outside sales. I did a bunch of stuff and I moved back to Georgia. I was living out in Las Vegas during the recession and traveling all over the West and for work. And, you know, I just enjoyed it, but I didn't really have any purpose. And then I got back in 2013, I got laid off twice in 1 year. And then towards the end of 2013, I took a job that I wasn't excited to get out of bed on Monday. I dreaded Mondays. And so I found another job and they were awful. It was the worst company I've ever worked for, worst people I've ever worked for. Anyway, I quit with an email. And so I moved back to, I know. I've never done that. I don't recommend it, but that one, they deserved it. So I moved back. I was in Atlanta. I moved back to Athens, Georgia, which is a little college town where the university is. It's where my house was. And so I moved back and I'm like, okay, what am I going to do next? And I decided, you know, I'm going to go get an MBA, but I have a year to kill before, you know, I already missed application deadlines to start in 2014. So I'll start in 2015. So I had to pay the bills. So I was driving Uber. I was the first Uber driver in Athens. And then I had a roommate who was a chef at the convention center. And he said, come just whatever you like, you can do setup shifts. You can bartend, whatever you want to do, just come. And so I went and I started working with all these people, you know, doing setup shifts, polishing silverware, you know, waiting events and pouring coffee and bussing tables. And, you know, a lot of things for somebody. My last title was director of sales and marketing for the German speaking markets. And now I'm like literally like cleaning, you know, now I'm working the dish pit and all these jobs. But I met all these people that like they work so hard and they make $8 an hour. And they work, you know, but it's a part-time job because the employer doesn't want to pay them benefits. And so I met all these people making $8 an hour and working three jobs with no benefits in any of them. And, you know, they're on the bus in the morning before you're awake. They're coming home after you're in bed and they're trying to raise families. And there's no real light at the end of the tunnel. There's no retirement savings. See that that's what our capitalism is built off of is basically the exploitation of others. It just didn't sit right that like, really, here's this beautiful convention center and, you know, all this, and these people pay all this money for these events and like, that's it. Hey, where's the rest of the money going? This is $8 an hour, part-time, no benefits. Like we're literally profiting off the backs of our lowest, you know, the hardest working people in our society. And for some reason, we don't appreciate them. And we don't give them any opportunity to better their lot in life and to better just where they were born into life. And that was my aha moment that like, this is broken. This, whatever this version of capitalism is, I love the academic notion of capitalism. I think it's the best system, but when it's left to its own devices, I just saw it at its worst. And a couple of those other jobs I had had, I saw the, like the layoffs and I saw the, you know, when it wasn't a layoff because business was down, it was a layoff to improve the margins. And I don't know. That was it for me. It was kind of the like, you know what? I'm going to figure out a way to do something that I'm passionate about and make it, you know, I say that my personal mission is to make jobs that don't suck. So if I can help companies get better and create jobs that are, you know, worth getting out of bed for on Monday and that provide and you can raise a family, that's all I want in life. And it all comes back to that kind of like that moment of actually meeting the working class that everybody tells you they're lazy and they're this and they just don't, if they try harder. And I realized that was all a lie. It was really, these are the hardest working people you'll meet. And it was really sad and tragic to see that there's really no opportunity for them to advance.
Well, here you are now. And the funny thing is that the whole world thrives on capitalism, really. It's just something else. We have come to the end of the show, but this conversation doesn't need to end right now, right here. We will continue, and we want to continue, and our listeners and viewers sure do want to continue. So if they want to do that, how can they find out more about you, and where can they continue this conversation?
I am I quit the metaverse. So I'm only on LinkedIn. I'm at linkedin.com/NathanA. Stuck. And then my company website is profitablepurposeconsulting.com. And then I don't have a direct link for the book yet, but if you search on Amazon for Happy Monday, you'll find my book. And yes, and my book is called Happy Monday.
Happy Monday, because that's the day you never liked before. How yep. many people want a Happy Monday? Look, we'll do the work for you. To all our listeners, our viewers, we'll do the work for you. We'll get the link and make it available from Amazon so that you can get Happy Monday and eventually have a Happy Monday. And what's that website again, Nathan?
It's
ProfitablePurposeConsulting.com. Consulting.com. Yeah, check it out. Check him out. Trouble him on his website. He left Meta. I don't want to ask why you left Metaverse. Your parting shot, Nathan?
Ooh, parting shot. I mean, I hate to use Gandhi's quote, but be the change you want to see in the world, and change requires action. So take action, you know, just because there's a world of problems we need to solve, but it doesn't mean you can't start somewhere. So take action, make progress, and be the change you want to see.
Wow. Be the change you want to see. Thanks a gazillion times, Nathan Stuck, for your wisdom and contribution today. Everybody, check his website, ProfitablePurposeConsulting.com. On the link, the links are in the description, and the book on Amazon is Happy Monday. You sure want to read that to all our listeners and viewers around the world. Well done.
MDN Talk Radio. The mic swings to you at MDN Talk Radio. The conversation is upbeat with life-enhancing chats moderated by personalities that matter. Exclusive conversations to keep our radio community interactive is with you now. Log on from the comfort of your couch or take us along in your palm as you go. Hear us. The undeniable choice.